everybody. I'm Bob. I'm a recovering adult child and also a member of a couple other programs. As my friend Barbara says, an equal opportunity addict. And my goodness, I am just feeling something that started this morning. I am involved in a open 12-step meeting in the mornings on Saturday at 10:30 in the morning, and the shares this morning were incredibly deep, and I felt a sense of reverence, and that's carried over to how I feel right now being in your presence, because I really honestly feel like I'm in a room of heroes. The work in this program is not easy work, and I am here to say that although it has been challenging over the years, it's not that it gets easier, but the way that I deal with things is a lot easier and a lot better because of continued work in this program. At this time of the evening, some of you saw my dog when she hopped up on our lap. She's had dinner, and there's a big basket over to my right here that has maybe 25 or more toys in it. Lots of them have squeaks in them. So at this time of the evening, we're usually hearing, and she's trying to get us to throw stuff. And so she's actually calmed down over here, which is a bit of a surprise, and that's cool. And I'm seeing people that I haven't seen for a while. It's good to see you, John. Always good to see you, Duncan, and I just feel so grateful to have people that are in my life that have chosen to come to the meeting and spend time, including members from my now so pleased to be a part of home group, the ACA Healing Fellowship in Santa Maria. So welcome, ACA Healing Fellowship people, and welcome friends. And welcome to people that I'm just meeting. Sharon, I'm Bob. So for some of us, this can be a tough time of year. For my first several years in recovery, it was really tough. And so one of the things I like to do around this time of year when I share is to remind me and share with you that it's neat to imagine that we're all gifts under a tree. And you, all of you, each and every one of you are gifts, and we are gifts to one another. And the sharing and the authenticity that happens in ACA meetings is something that I've come to cherish over the years and count on. And the last people I want to acknowledge are the elephants. We have a group of sponsees that meet every Saturday at 4:30 in the afternoon. And that was coined by Lucy, who had a wonderful share last month. Hi, Lucy. And it's a meeting that is called that because we discuss the elephants in the living room. And we get the stuff out on the table and talk about it. We had a terrific meeting today that was led by one of the members on grief and grieving. And I will touch a little bit about that, I hope, this evening as I share. So I came into 12-step recovery February the 16th, 1988. I was 3 days removed from an aborted suicide attempt, which happened as a result of a 3-year-old child walking from the back of a 3,500-square-foot home to where I was lying down in a den and getting ready to get up and go and dispose of the miserable life that I felt that I had lived, not even yet aware of how much shame and guilt came into play in my living and beingness. And this child was sleepwalking, apparently, 3 o'clock in the morning, came into this little den where I was he had to walk all the way down a long hallway from the back of a home where there were bedrooms. And I was there with around 15, 16 people. And this three-year-old child was the son of the only people that I did not know out of the group that were there. And I'd gone up to Lake Tahoe to make one last run. And I was drinking and using drugs 100 miles an hour. And the more I used and drank, the more awake I got. And I was having psychotic episodes and a breakdown, which is why I wanted to end it all. And he came into this den and crawled underneath the Afghan that I had pulled over myself, and he put his arms around my neck, and I lay back down on this Afghan and passed out. And an hour and a half or so later, I woke up. It was 6:30 in the morning. My waking up woke him up, and he let out a scream because he didn't know where he was. And the notion that I had in that moment was that I had heard about 12-step recovery from my sister, who preceded me into recovery almost 11 years before I came to you. And she had mentioned that she was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that thought that perhaps I should try an AA meeting, although I was certain it wouldn't work, overrode the thought that I was not worthy enough to continue to exist on this planet. So was that divine intervention? I don't know. I've had several instances in my life where things that I've experienced have most certainly happened and not been in a position to understand why they were happening. And so I'm grateful for those things. Not in a religious sense, I do believe in guardian angels. So I did what was expected of me when I came in. And right around 14 months, I'd worked the 12 steps of AA. I had a sponsor. I was sponsoring in the program. And I was beginning to feel worse and worse and worse. And I defaulted to, there's something the matter with me. I'm flawed. I'm never going to get it, whatever it might be. And I'm not going to make it. And some real craziness started coming back into my mind because I really knew that alcohol and drugs were not the solution. So I couldn't figure out what I had done wrong by working the steps and so on. So I went to my sponsor, and I can't speak enough about sponsorship because once I had taken the steps with the sponsor, I had unburdened as much as I could through my first journey through the steps with this man. He knew me as much as I could disclose at that time. So I didn't have a problem in trusting talking to him about where I was and what I was feeling. And he listened to everything I had to say, as he always did. And he looked at me and he said, "Bob, it sounds like you might have some Al-Anon issues. Why don't you try an Al-Anon meeting?" And I was in Santa Clara County at the time, and the meeting directories in Santa Clara County were really thick. There were over 200 Al-Anon meetings in Santa Clara County, and the one that I picked out was a Tuesday night Al-Anon meeting with ACA focus, and I did not have the vaguest idea what that meant. But that meeting was close to where I lived, so I made the decision to go on May the 17th of 1988. I stumbled into that Al-Anon meeting with ACA focus. And there was a fellow that shared experience, strength, and hope for 10 minutes or maybe a little longer. And I heard my story. And 1 or 2 minutes after he began to share, I began to sob and I cried the entire meeting. And I didn't feel the least bit embarrassed that I was among people, which astonished me. I didn't feel like stopping crying. Nobody ran across the room with a box of Kleenex or patted me on the back. Everyone sat there and allowed me to be in that space with the integrity of my real-time feelings. And I was introduced to you, thank God, because I did not realize how much of an impact the environmental conditions of my life played upon my desire to drink alcohol, use drugs, and later to find out that my first drug of choice was sugar, which I mainlined from a very, very early age and caused problems for me really up until July of last year when I had been on vacation in Greece and had a little bit of trouble catching my breath when I was walking up a hill. Mentioned something about a month later to my primary physician, and it turned out that I have heart disease, and I had to have 3 stents put in, 2 in 1 month and 1 in the second month, to relieve a 100% blocked right coronary artery and 89% blocked left coronary artery. A lot of that had to do with the way that I behaved around food. So the last time I had the privilege of sharing with you folks at the Santa Barbara speaker meeting was in 2017. And I'm now 50 pounds lighter than I was when I was there at that meeting. And in no small measure, due to information that I get about OA from my friends and from my wonderful significant other partner who is sitting right here with me, and the fact that I was able to take direction because I finally had the 2-foot drop from my head to my heart that I was eating myself to death, and I don't want to do that either. So how did all this manifest, and what have you taught me, and what do I continue to aspire to learn about myself? Well, I moved, I guess I can actually, I thought it was 11, but I guess it's actually 12 times by the time I was 12 years old, because I lived in a motel for a few months in 1957, and that was a move. So, needless to say, it was incredibly difficult for me to form any kind of lasting relationships with other people. I was horrified of other people. And the reason that our family moved around so much was not because I was in a military family. I was in a family where my mother was the primary primary leader of the family. My father was not a part of the picture. And my mother had her own issues, including, as I found out later, some mental illness issues, and she pulled geographics one after another, always trying to escape that which is unescapable, which is her. I can't escape me ever. I can run, but I can't hide from myself. So during my growing up experience, most of my learning in my early years came from babysitters. Some of those babysitters were abusive. My mother was abusive to me. I have sexual abuse in my background. I have emotional incest in my background. Things that are really tough to uncover in recovery, and yet so vital to uncover in recovery, because by having them locked down, they're having an effect on my behavior in every waking hour that I have until I can become realistic enough, courageous enough to do the work to get this stuff up and out on the surface, and to then begin to use the steps to put myself into a position to get into forgiveness. first and foremost for myself, and also for perpetrators from my past. Because one of my favorite things that I've learned is the best definition of forgiveness is it's giving up all hope of a better past. And ACA is most assuredly a guidepost for that for me. So, first I was born in Warren, Ohio. Moved a couple of times in Warren. Then when my parents divorced for the first time, at about 1.5, close to 2 years of age, my mother reconnected with my father. He suggested that the family move to Chico. So we went all the way across country and came to Chico, California. And I was there until I was 4. And some of the physical abuse that I experienced was from babysitter's son there. And I was terrified all the time. One of the things that happened in my recovery that has been challenging, and it doesn't affect me anymore, at least very rarely, I'll say, was that I was late all the time for everything. And through working the steps, I found that as a 3.5 and 4-year-old boy, I was at the next door neighbor's home, Billy, and my mother didn't get home until about 5 o'clock at night. Sorry about that. Just going to hang the phone up for that. I had to get from Billy's house to our house, or to the babysitter's house where we were living. And in order to do that, I had to go through the babysitter's son who used to beat me. And so if I waited until my mother got home and she was looking for me, I was late when I was supposed to be home, but late was better than getting beaten. So one of the things that I had to learn in recovery was that in order to be on time, I don't ever have to plan to be anywhere on time. I have to depart on time from whatever I'm doing in order to get to where I am on time. And this is a very important gift in recovery, because how many times did I sabotage myself in my life when people counted on me for one thing or another and I'd show up late? So it's a great recovery piece. And after Chico, we got to Chico, my parents were remarried again in a whole separate church wedding, wedding dress and everything. And not too long after that, my father took off again. And he went to Houston, and he tried to get the family to come to Houston. And I was in my 40s before I found out that instead of the demon that my father was being painted to be by my mother and by my mother's friends, that he was actually a really nice guy. And he had his idiosyncrasies, but most of the reason that he was fleeing, which he did a couple of times, was to get away from the craziness of the family of origin. And it's so peculiar, as I go through family history and archaeology, which I'm a proponent of doing and have done virtually all of my recovery, is that my maternal grandfather and grandmother, who my maternal grandfather was my main father figure because my father was absent, he was a higher-up in the Methodist Church, and our family was looked upon. We actually lived in a home that had a white picket fence around it for a while in Wilmette, Illinois. We were looked at as a leave-it-to-beaver kind of family, and my grandfather was asked to speak all over the world. He was a very powerful man in the church, and I heard about love all the time, and I heard about security, and I heard about how important God was in all our lives. Well, that didn't translate into my life at home, because my higher power, who was my mother and the family of origin, were not showcasing and walking the talk of what we heard in church on Sundays. And this is an extremely mixed message. Sometimes I just feel so much empathy in my heart for people that come into the program, and have such a difficulty connecting with a higher power as ACAs, it's surprising to me in some ways that any of us can connect with a higher power when the higher power of our young lives were harmful to us. And so it's a leap of faith and trust that is a true testament to the power of the steps, that we can reconnect with a power greater than ourselves and that we have a right to choose that power. So it's one of the most profound gifts of the 12 steps in my view. Anyway, eventually we really couldn't make it in Chico, and the threat of this fellow, when my mother found out that I was being harmed by this babysitter's son, sent us all the way across country again to suburban Chicago, and we moved in to my grandfather's home. And it was a small apartment in Evanston, Illinois. Then we moved to a bigger apartment in Evanston, Illinois. I was so happy to be around a male figure. My grandfather, I just took to him like a dry sponge being thrown into a pool of water. The problem was that he was not around either, because he traveled for his work worldwide. And I always heard about how bad a guy my dad was because he abandoned the family. But all the adults in the family were never around either. It was always babysitters or people that I didn't know. And the message was very clear to me that from the time I was about 5 or 6 years of age, that I was going to have to do this life on my own, and I wasn't going to get any help. I did not know that's the message I was giving myself at the time. And I found out about that later. And if I talk a little bit about grief later, I'll talk a little bit about how I had to grieve that too, because that survivalist child is why I'm here today and I'm able to share with you. And I'm grateful to that little boy. He's a part of little Bobby. He's a part of that inner child that I do my best to reparent one day at a time. Finally, by the time we moved from Evanston to Wilmette, Illinois, I was actually in one place for almost 4 years. And in sixth grade, after being so difficult to feel like I fit in, I actually felt in the last month or so of school that I was connected to my classmates. And I was such a competitive person that the only time I was welcomed in to do anything was when it was connected to sports. I have athletics in my background, but in terms of interacting in any other way, I just couldn't integrate. And I was walking home from school one day with someone, and I said, why do people not like me? And this young man looked at me, and he didn't have an answer to the question. And I don't know whether he went home and told his parents, and his parents said, well, you tell kids at school that they should be nicer to Bobby. But that next month, people were nicer to me. And I learned much later on in recovery that the best thing I can do for myself is to take action. That was an action I took that I didn't yet believe in. I don't even know why, really, it came out of my mouth. But there may have been a cause and effect there. That's the good news. The bad news is that a couple of days before the graduation party from sixth grade, my mom announced that we were moving to California. And all the way across country, I went again, and upheaval and more newness and not knowing people and the loss of connection with my grandfather, who was my father figure. Just checking on time here. Okay. So alcohol came to me in junior high school, and the first time I took a drink, all of the fear and trepidation that I had went right out the window. I can remember the moment. And the mistake about that feeling was that it gave me the illusion that alcohol was an ally. I didn't know that I had a problem with alcohol. All I knew was that alcohol seemed to solve this fear and paranoia and this instability of being able to connect with people. And I began to feel connected with people. And that was a dangerous situation that I didn't know about, because as time progressed, I really couldn't be connected with people without the use of substances until I got to you at age 41 on February 16th, 1988. So what happened for me was I heard things like our disease is first a disease of fun, then fun plus problems, and eventually nothing but problems. And when I reached that problem stage and I came to you and I had relief in my first journey through taking the steps, then immense amounts of fear came back to me when I had the experience of the meltdown at 14 months and came into ACA. From there, life began to get really interesting. All of a sudden, I began to have conversations with people who were doing what I know today is called the work. I began to listen to people say that they were in therapy. Well, I thought that was fine for them. Not that I didn't feel that I was crazy, but I wasn't as crazy as some of the people that would share about their experience of going to therapy. No, really, in point of fact, I was just as crazy, if not crazier. And so therapy became a part of my experience, and I'm so grateful for that. I also began to hang out with people that began to talk about going to workshops. And in 1991, in late January, there was an organization called Life Balance. And Life Balance was comprised of very powerful speakers, John Bradshaw, Melody Beattie, Pia Melody, Joy Miller, Raquel Lerner. Some of these names may be familiar to you. And there was a conference that happened in San Jose, California. And I went to that conference, and it was life-changing. Everybody that was at that conference had grown up and gone into ACA and Codependence Anonymous as a result of coming into ACA or NA or OA. And they had landed in ACA and Codependence Anonymous. And I had been going to meetings for the most part and had a sponsor because I was trying to figure out how to fix everybody else that was a problem in my life. And in that weekend of that immense information channel at that ACA conference, I really learned that I had to recover for me, that I had a responsibility to my inner child, also a responsibility to my inner adolescent, and a responsibility to my inner young adult. And ACA began to give me rites of passage experiences in my life. I had to learn how to interact with people. I had to learn how to keep safe distances to allow people, not allow, to be able to share with people their space, as had been done with me when I had that breakdown in my first ACA meeting. I began to get information that caused me to make some decisions to do things that were way the heck out of my comfort zone. One of those things is, as I uncovered people that had harmed me in my childhood, I heard someone suggest that they had gone and revisited places that they have lived. And I have gone back everywhere that I have lived in my life, except to Warren, Ohio, where I was born, because I don't know where that was. And I had intended to go to the Warren General Hospital where I was born, but that place doesn't exist anymore. So it's the one place that I can't go. Most of the real nasty abuse that happened with me happened at the home in Wilmette, Illinois, right under the nose of people that were protectors, including my mom, who was at the foundation of some of the abuse. And I've actually been to that home in Wilmette 5 times. The first time I went and knocked on the door, young person, a young woman, mother, answered the door, and I was standing there, and I said, I used to live here up until the time I was 11 years old. She didn't know me from Adam, and she looked right square at me in the eye and said, would you like to come in? And I said, I'd really like to come in. So I went into the house. I could feel feelings the moment I went in there. The air was thick. And I went through the house. I had been around the neighborhood. I'd been over to the school that I had elementary school years from 3 to 6th grade. I went by my best friend's house. His family no longer lived there. But going up into the home, it was a 3-story home, and the 3rd story was the attic. And the attic was my safe place. The whole top floor, that attic, was my place to go and hide and be safe. And you'd walk up a staircase like this, turn right, and then turn around and go back into the large space, which is also my bedroom. And along the facing of the wall there, there was a storage door that went the length of the wall to the other end of the room. And the gap was maybe 2.5 feet, maybe 3 feet wide. And I put small boxes in there, and I used to open the door and go in and hide. And people would call. They might come up to the room looking for me, and I'd hide in that place because I felt safe there. People couldn't get at me. I had no idea that I was taking care of my inner child. I just knew that it felt safe. And this young mother, when we approached the stairwell to go up into this attic space, called up to her son, and she explained to him that someone had come to see his room, ask him if it was okay that I came up, which floored me how healthy that was. And he said yes, and I walked up into the attic, and the room was laid out exactly the same way as it was laid out when I lived in it. And this boy was 8 years old, which was the age that I was when I went into that room. And I was biting down on my lip because I didn't want to have a meltdown in front of this woman. And after a couple of minutes of looking at the room and greeting her son, I noticed over on the side of the wall the door, and she saw me look at that, and she said, would you like to look inside that door? I couldn't believe it, and I said yes. And I walked over, and I opened the door, and the smell of the fiberglass came back and hit me squarely. I warped back in time, remembering how safe that felt, and I looked down in the corner of the hallway, and I said, Bobby, come out. I'm here for you now. And I actually felt emerging around my center area, my tummy, as if a connection had taken place, and I wept. And this woman did not bat an eyelash, neither did her son. And I wiped the tears out of my eyes, and I thanked her profusely for being able to share that experience. And subsequently, I went back to the house again the following year when I was in the Chicago area. I went in again because there was one room where sexual abuse happened to me in that house, and the door had been closed the first time I went. And I went back again, and the door was closed. A few years later, I went back again. Different family owned the home. They welcomed me in. Went upstairs, the door was closed. And finally, a few years ago, my sweetheart Beth was with me, and we went to a big conference in Peoria, Illinois, and I decided to go back to the house to show Beth the house, not intending to go in, and there was a different owner, and Beth had heard my story and wanted to be there with me, so we went up the stairs, and that room was open, and I was able to actually walk inside the room and pray and make amends to myself for how hard I'd been and how ashamed I'd felt about what had happened to me, and to really feel the spirit of forgiveness. I gave up all hope of a better past by being in that space. And what a cleansing thing that's been. Oh my. I continue to seek as much information as I can as I continue to try to grow up in this program. I'm sure it's going to be an ongoing process, because anytime I'm acting out in any sort of way that I may not be happy with, it usually comes from early childhood fears where things aren't making sense, and I have to overcome my worst nemesis, which is not reaching out and asking for help from anyone that I'm connected to in the program. I am so lucky to have a wonderful sponsor who I continue to go through steps with. He reminds me that I have a broken brain, and that the way that I can connect with my broken brain is to not let it occupy too much space in my mind if I'm off kilter, and to connect with people that I'm close to. I had difficulty in relationships for most of my life, which had its birthplace in my dysfunctional family system. But 12 years ago, I was lucky enough to get in the sandbox with someone that had the same spirit that I have and the same desire to stay in commitment. And I have been wonderfully connected to my life partner, Beth, now for 12 years. In no small measure, thanks to Barbara B, who reintroduced us and had her own sort of vision about the fact that there was something going on that neither of the two of us saw. This is just another one of the inspirational ingredients that happen as a result of being connected to the heroes that we have in this program. I am so grateful to be able to be connected as a sponsor to people, to be connected in sponsorship with people, to come to meetings with an open heart, and most of the time, an open mind, to listen to people and their experience, and to have people be able to look me square between the eyes if I'm acting in a way that I truly wouldn't want to act, and say to me, "Bob, this is what you're saying, this is what you're doing, which would you like to be true?" Gets me back on the right track. I love the fact that I have intimate relationships in my life today. Before I came to recovery, I thought intimacy was only about sex and nothing else. And I learned that it's about into me you see, me being me and letting you see me, which is what I learned from ACA and my ACA experience, and I practice and ascribe to today. I just am really, really grateful to have had the opportunity to share with you today. I'm feeling like that might be it. And I wish all of you just the merriest, merriest of holiday season that it goes through next year. Be safe, be well. Take vaccinations if that's your choice, and wear masks. And thank you so much, committee, for inviting me to share, and Happy New Year, everybody.